It's Mail It In Friday.
The plant called and said, if you don't come in tomorrow, don't bother coming in Monday.
Woohoo! 4-day weekend.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
We have mailed it into the final hour of Overdrive. We're up on TSN 1050, the TSN app. On TSN 4 now is SportsCenter. Mark Rowell in for Brian Hayes alongside Dave Pullen, the true warrior of TSN hockey. Because while your colleagues are playing golf, like James Duthie, you're in here working.
But I may have played yesterday, and I may be playing tomorrow on Sunday.
I was going to allow you to either say that or not say that.
And Monday?
Got to get it in. And for James's sake, he's got to get it in because the World Juniors are beginning next week.
You know what? I'm a sports fan, though, and I watch other sports. I mean, there are various parts of my life. I was really involved in baseball. I trained with a baseball player. College, I loved baseball. We had a really good baseball team, went to all the games, and followed the Major League game closely, went to a lot of Cubs games. You know, living close proximity to Wrigley and the odd White Sox games. So, but I'm a big sports fan. And football, you know, the NFL was, I mean, I lived in the States for 30 years. It was, it's the king. You are a sports fan. You're a football fan in the States. And so, you know, at various points in my life, I've been wrapped up in all four sports, and I've known guys personally in all the sports, so that's when you start to watch way closer. When your buddy's with a baseball player, you watch, right? And I remember meeting a pitcher who oddly enough, spent his winters in South Bend. He had married a girl from South Bend, and he spent his winters in South Bend, although he's playing in the majors. And the year I met him, he told me he thought he had another year or two left. Mm-hmm. And I believe he pitched for 15 more years, and that was Jamie Moyer.
Played forever.
Like, played forever. But I remember when I first met him, he was pitching, you know, in the winter in our indoor facility. And it was like, yeah, he was close to done. And boy, what a great run. And then won the World Series.
Yeah.
You know,
great story.
In his career. Yeah.
So, because you've been an executive in hockey, but you know how baseball works. Take us through what you think Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro are feeling, are thinking this week when they've got a really good team. We're on the brink of maybe doing something special. And by all accounts, are in on some big players. And you come away from the deadline and you get Whit Merrifield. You get some help in the bullpen, but you don't get Luis Castillo, right? And you don't get even Ian Happ. Like, you might look back and go, thank God we didn't, because we kept these prospects or those guys got hurt or whatever. It didn't work out for those teams. But in that moment, how defeated do you maybe feel at the deadline because you worked so hard and you just weren't able to get those deals done?
I think you're a better baseball team now than you were before the deadline, and that's the goal. You didn't give up significant pieces of your farm system. And I think a lot of it is dictated by how the team is doing. And when I sat in the, I think it was in the midst of that 8 or 9 game losing streak, and I remember saying to Hayes, I don't mind a losing streak in early July at all.
Yeah. Like, no, I think you said it to me. Like, this is the time to do
this
it.
This is the time to
have a losing streak. The sky was falling.
But to rev it up and get on a roll before the trade deadline. And so you were on a real positive spin. Your team was on a positive spin. Now, the players in the room want help. But they don't want help at the expense of someone else in the room. Clearly, they have a close group of guys. And so you may say, well, we want to get better. But don't trade him, or him. You know? And so you're weighing the balance of that. As an executive, you're weighing how close your team is. And you're weighing the strength at various positions. Pitching is obviously a critical piece, and losing Stripling right after the trade deadline isn't good. But you did pick up 4 different arms, and you know, you picked up some depth, or 3 arms rather. You picked up some depth, and you know, and it looks like It looks like Mitchell White will be in the starting rotation, if I'm correct. It looks
I think by default, you kind of have to. Yeah. And he might be another Ross Stripling. Yeah.
And there's other pieces of that. Like, you have 5 years of control with that player. You have to think about those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about the monetary side of it. Whit Merrifield is interesting because of his versatility. And, you know, when you get a player like that, you've essentially addressed maybe three of your questions. Did you pick up speed on the base path? Yes. Did you pick up, you know, someone who can play the infield? Yes. Did you pick up someone you can throw in center field? Yes. So,
didn't pick up a left-handed bat.
No.
But yeah, I know what you're saying.
You know, you've picked up some versatility.
And we've seen championship teams, or at least these teams have success in the playoffs, need that. And
you need the guy who can flip around.
It comes in so big.
Because you're going to have injuries somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
So, but I think more importantly, coming out of the All-Star break now, you're 9-3. So that softens everything you're thinking about your team. You know, you're like, the big guy is, well, he did lose a game to the Tigers, right? 4-2. You're a big stud pitcher, but he's won a couple. He won again last night. And so you're happy with that, and because he's going to be the anchor.
Yeah, Alec Manoah, it's
12 wins. He's going to be the anchor. So I think overall, as a manager, I'm feeling pretty good because my team's playing well.
Yeah. Well, they played well last night. They won 9-3 thanks to a 6-run eighth inning. And with more on the Blue Jays, we're joined by MLB.com Blue Jays reporter Keegan Matheson, one of the great reporters and one of the great voices in the game. Great to chat with you again, Keegan.
Glad to be here, guys. How's everything going up there?
We're good. You know, when the team's winning, you stop talking so much about the players that you didn't get at the deadline, and you start focusing on the players who were already here and some of the pieces that they did get. Maybe let's start there. First game for the new Blue Jays last night, Whit Merrifield plays center field. He also addressed his vaccination status. What was your takeaway from your first encounter as Whit Merrifield as a member of the Toronto Blue Jays?
Yeah, that answered a lot of questions very quickly. And number one, the vaccination status, of course. When the Blue Jays acquired Merrifield, it was a surprise. You know, guys, I won't pretend to sound smart and know that was coming. In fact, I was, I think, writing the Mitch White trade at the time, and I saw a tweet from our Mark Feinsand saying, Whit Merrifield has been traded. I looked at that and said, okay, not my problem. I can keep going with what I'm doing. Little did I know, it would soon be my problem. But the vaccination status was key. That was really big. And now that he can come back into Canada, not just in 14 days, but when they return, is massive. And I've heard there's other benefits to the vaccine as well. It probably helps him. But at this point, he's a really good fit on this roster. Now that we can focus on the baseball side, the speed he brings is a unique aspect. This is a more athletic roster now, really top to bottom. When you look at guys like Springer, at Bichette, Vladdy moves really well for a big guy. It's an athletic roster. But in terms of the guy you want to put on, think of the 2015-16 era, Dalton Pompey, kind of that pinch runner. Late in a game, if you need that, a true base stealer. And I think they have that in Merrifield now. He was 15 for 18, I believe, coming in here. He's got a couple of 40-plus steal seasons. And a month ago, that would have fit well. Now it fits beautifully on this roster because John Schneider loves to run. He loves to be aggressive. It's a chaotic and pretty fun style of baseball at times. But Merrifield embraces that. He plays everywhere, which is what the Blue Jays like to do. And you really see how it fits the identity of the team, I believe. It's you know, his numbers need to improve coming from KC. But he fits what the Jays are trying to do, and I think that improves the move automatically.
So with the Blue Jays winning last night, you saw a lot of the core contribute to, you know, the Jays winning that game. But you also saw George Springer DH. What is the concern regarding his health at this moment when we've seen him grimace in pain, when we've seen him kind of come out of the batter's box, not look right, but he's still not going to the IL. Is this a situation where they are just going to have to roll with how he's feeling right now? Or do they now have the luxury of shutting him down for a week or two because of a player like Merrifield?
Well, they will, I think, need to just roll with this and deal with it as it happens. But that doesn't mean it's convenient. That doesn't mean anything about this is good. And Springer out of the lineup again today. We'll hear very soon now from John Schneider just to see if this is more maintenance or if something was aggravated. But after this point, it has been maintenance, trying to stay ahead of that. But how many games are you playing a week? If it's a day on, then, you know, a few days off, that's troubling. If you can play two or three in a row, then take one off back-to-back, oh, okay. That's easy enough to handle, especially when you have a Merrifield. You can throw Raimel Tapia out there, who's been hitting well lately this past month. That's okay, but thinking through late September into October, you need Springer every day. Because we have almost seen the fully healthy George Springer this year, and he is an incredible baseball player. It's taken a long time to see that in Toronto because of injuries. He has not struggled really at any point. But when he's out there, you see a truly incredibly talented player defensively on the bases, hitting for power, and having that out of the leadoff spot is unfair. You know, most teams do not have that luxury. So the Blue Jays need to get this right. You know, is it a matter of pain or is it a matter of injury where it could get worse? That's what you worry about. You know, it seems like this could be something addressed in the offseason as well, whether he needs something to be fixed up there. But you do start to worry. He's your star player. He's making $150 million and he's not in there every night. You have to worry.
Keegan, I want to stay on Springer because just from the seat I sit in as a fan and I watch the joy he plays the game with. And, you know, even when they show him in the dugout when someone else does something, but when he gets a simple hit, the expression of joy, it's not too cool for school. Like, it's pure joy at playing baseball. And the acquisition of him 2 years ago, well, through free agency, but the signing of him 2 years ago, I think it's had an even bigger effect on the young group of players and the energy and the excitement. Because with that young group of stars, a young group of stars can go either way in terms of being cool and sometimes to a negative. But boy, they seem to be having fun, and he seems to be right in the middle of everything.
Absolutely. There is really something to be said, and this can go for any sport, I believe, but certainly in baseball, about a guy in the clubhouse who, it doesn't matter if he's the big vocal leader or holding meetings, rah-rah, whatever it is, but a guy who quietly gives the rest of the roster permission to do things, you know, permission to be themselves, permission to enjoy their life in the big leagues. And that's important. I know that the dances and the home run jackets rub some people the wrong way, whatever. It's a long season. You know, I'm exhausted covering this team, and I'm sitting in an air-conditioned press box not moving. I cannot imagine going out there every day. 162 games. It's long. It's mentally draining for these players, especially when you are standing up there getting struck out and going 0-for-4. That takes a toll. So having a leader like Springer who is able to command respect that he has earned both with who he is as a person and his success. You know, having a ring helps out a lot when you step into a clubhouse like that. But he's able to balance that with some fun, with some of the lighter side. And I think that's healthy. You know, so many great superstar athletes, if you took them and put them in an office job, they'd be fired within a day because suddenly that thirst for greatness starts to look a little less stable. But Springer is someone who balances that out well, and that fits with a young team. It needs to fit with a young team. Because if you put a surly veteran in this clubhouse who did not want to dance around and have fun and who wanted to play a serious brand of baseball, I don't know if that works. I don't know if that fits. So it's a clubhouse chemistry thing that I think Springer is a big part of.
Keegan Mathieson joining us on Overdrive. So tonight, Jose Berríos is on the mound. And in the month of July, the Blue Jays went 6-0 when he started. He earned three of those wins. Interesting that five of those six games were at home. How confident are the Blue Jays that Berríos is starting to get back to the guy we saw last year when he joined the Blue Jays and was so good down the stretch?
They really think he is at this point. And all along, Berríos' struggles have been kind of strange. You know, I think back earlier in the season when it was really bad, you could compare that to Yusei Kikuchi, but they were totally different. Kikuchi could not find a strike zone. He could not get out of the first inning. And it was something that if you watched just one batter, you knew it was bad. It was obviously, clearly, visually bad. It didn't work. But if you watched Berríos face one batter, he looked fine. He was just missing by a little bit. He was not losing the zone. He was not leaving meatball sliders over the plate every single time, but he was just missing a bit. And that can be frustrating for a pitcher, you know, because you're not trying to rebuild your mechanics. You're trying to tinker. And for Berríos, as well from 2017 until 2021, guys, five seasons, he was as consistent a player in Major League Baseball as there was. I'm talking position players, hitters, everybody. He was as consistent as it gets. So he's not used to that. But he has come back well. I think the Blue Jays really like where he's at now. And he has to be. He absolutely needs to be, because you need a big three in terms of a rotation. Gausman, Manoa, Berríos, you need at least three in the postseason if you're going to go up against the Dodgers or a Yankees or a Padres, whoever it is. That's who you need to compare yourselves to. And without Berríos, the Blue Jays aren't that. With him, I think they are.
Keegan, do you like the timing of the deadline now, the way it's set up, and not the fictitious waivers, smoke and mirrors, and, you know, whether the lineup is set now? And I know we've been through a couple of pandemic years, but maybe this is the first one since where, you know, it's a hard deadline and this is your team moving forward.
Yeah, for my own sanity, it's lovely. I think for the baseball,
well,
the
that's
baseball
what's important.
Side of it, every year I'm trying to remind myself, you know, how does this waiver deadline work again? But I like it. It forces teams, because when you combine that, guys, with an extra wild card spot, there's just so many reasons for teams to be aggressive at the deadline. So many more teams are involved now and are within three or four games of that wild card spot. So there's aggression on the market, which is good. It's not always going to result in a Juan Soto trade, but I think transactions and big names moving is good for this sport. That's why the NBA, I think, is such a fantastic league, because every offseason you're seeing major names move, whether it's because of a team building exercise or because some guy wakes up and says, hey, I don't like this city, trade me. Five guys do that every offseason, and it's fantastic. I love that. We need more of that in baseball. So I think it leads to more movement, because you need to set your roster. Finally, August 1, maybe next year it'll be. But when you combine that with the number of teams involved, I think you're going to see more movement and more teams buying. You know, even teams like Baltimore this year creeping into that picture, it really opens up a lot of doors. I think it's a good thing.
Well, when you're watching last night, and if you're Ross Atkins or Mark Shapiro, and you're watching some of the performances, you kind of validate not having to go out and get some big names. And it, obviously, it's one game. But, you know, Bo Bichette going 3-for-5. He's at the top of their list of players they need to get going, because this offense still has room to grow. When you talk to him, when you talk to the organization, where is the balance? Is it more mechanical? Is it more mental? Is it a little bit of both in terms of Bo Bichette not being that 300 hitter guy who led the league in hits that we saw last year and so much is expected of him?
Yeah, he seems close, guys. And Bo, down in spring training, this was one I was wrong on, at least up until this point. He looked fantastic in spring training. Like, he looked like a guy who was about to light the league on fire in spring training. Hasn't happened. But the margin is so thin for him. And when we talk about mechanics with him, it's a bit of a different conversation. He has that all-natural swing. He goes by the feel of his body. So it's more about timing, I think, for Bo, and a lot about pitch selection. He loves to swing. He has never met a pitch that he does not love to swing at. And it's not a gentle swing either. He's going all out for these. So I think finding the right spots for that aggression is the key for Bo. I like him where he's at in the lineup now, a little more than when he was higher up, certainly. And if he gets going, that's really the missing piece. You know, they need more from Vladdy. Absolutely, they need more. But if Bo can get back to being that 290, 300 hitter, he's going to drive in a ton of runs. You know, he has the talent to be a 30-30 guy, home runs and stolen bases, an all-around player. But, you know, one area of his game, too, I should mention, the defense. We haven't talked about that much recently, which is a good thing. He's not going to be a superstar defender, but as long as I'm not talking about it, that's a good thing for him. The bat just needs to come up, and I think he's close.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, enjoy the game tonight in Minnesota, and as always, we appreciate you taking some time to join us here on Overdrive.
You got it, guys. Take care.
There's Keegan Mathison, MLB.com, Blue Jays reporter. The Blue Jays taking on the Twins tonight, a day after opening the series with a 9-3 victory. And as you kind of pointed out at the beginning of the show, it was a lot closer than that scoreline indicates. The six runs in the eighth inning really do help. But
and Springer was a big part of that as well. But I'll tell you what, Vladdy's playing really good defensively.
Yeah, like, that's another thing.
Like, he made some plays at first last night.
And people will roll their eyes and go, it's first base.
Uh-uh. But he had a couple of plays that were significant.
Yeah, and you know, we're showing it on TSN.ca right now. you know, Matt Chapman, again, had a couple of nice plays there. But, yeah, the flexibility by Vladdy.
I was actually worried about that one.
That's a pulled hammy, like, right?
Oh.
Or like a groin injury.
You know, that's a skate save, actually. Yeah. That's a slap shot to the
Vladimir
lower corner.
Guerrero,
that's a
Jr.
wicked skate save
could
by
be
Vladdy
the Leafs'
Jr.
answer in net. If Matt Murray goes down
you
with
know
an
what?
Injury.
He was running the bases. He's
moving.
Stole, maybe it was two nights ago he stole third.
He did.
And
yeah, he scored. He stole two bases in like 3 days. I don't think he had one at all like this season. And then he had two in like a week.
He's feeling good.
It's good. Confidence is a big thing when you're hitting. So if he heats up, Bichette heats up, suddenly you're looking back at the deadline thinking, maybe it is nice that we kept, you know, Gabe Moreno and... you know, Tiedemann and some of the other prospects that you probably would have had to give up for some big...
Well, it's your gauge on how good your prospect is and what point they're at. Like, if it's on a scale, you think they're really good, but they're just not at the point of being attractive to trade yet, then you hang on to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Brooke Henderson is looking to hang on to the leaderboard at the Women's Open. She's six shots back of the lead at the fifth and final major of the year. Bob Weeks, our TSN golf reporter, will join us when we return on Overdrive here on TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Overdrive continuing. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes alongside Dave Pullen. You talked about how, you know, you love to talk about other sports. And the other sports are anything but hockey because for most of the year, you're dedicated to hockey. And I got to think of the near the top of that list, if not at the top of the list, is golf.
Golf is, for sure.
And it's so funny. Right now, you have, at least in Canada, kind of two ends of the spectrum where you have Brooke Henderson. Great story. Like, it's great watching her play. Seeing her wrap up the Evian Championship was one of the fun sporting events I've watched so far this year, the clutch putt. And then you have LIV Golf. And how that story just continues to morph into something new almost every week.
Like when you get a group of guys together that don't play together regularly, as it did yesterday, LIV Golf's a hot topic.
Yeah.
It just is amongst the golf world.
Well, now there's the lawsuit against the PGA Tour and that Phil Mickelson.
Now it's become personal.
Very much so. Well, I feel like the genesis of LIV Golf was personal because of Greg Norman.
Yes. And arguably so.
His vendetta or however you want to describe it towards the PGA Tour.
Right.
And he's given an opportunity to players and all the power to them.
Yeah, don't begrudge them at all. Everybody's circumstance is different.
But like, I don't understand necessarily the argument that you should still allow us to play on the PGA and allow us to play in these events. Like, you need to qualify to play in those tournaments. So you're off playing exhibitions. That's great. You're making money. But you're not, like, how are you earning?
You don't just get to do that.
Right? Like,
you don't get to do
it.
No, you don't. You just
like
don't.
I get it. If you won the Masters, you could play.
But each one of those majors is different.
Everyone is different.
The Masters is a lifetime exemption.
Right.
You know, the other ones are 5 years, but they cross. I believe if you win a major, you get all four majors.
I get that. But.
But you got to do it.
Right? Like, you can't have. You're like.
Well, arguably, they were saying they wanted to play less golf. Well, go play less golf.
That's sure.
Fine. Go play less golf.
That is my own, like, my only issue with LIV Golf is pretending like you're not doing it for the money and saying you're doing it to grow the game. And and the fact that's like, oh, but like I still should be allowed to play in those tournaments. Like, you have guys grinding to try to play into those tournaments.
Right.
So while you play once
you
a month,
you don't just get to.
And you show up and that's all you need to do. You could shoot an 80. Doesn't matter.
No, because it's a draw.
Right. And you want, like, even if you are a top 25 player who could conceivably win at any weekend, if you're not playing competitively week in and week out, you're going to lose a bit of your edge, are you not?
There's no question.
So how are you, like, even if we pull the whole, yeah, but it's Dustin Johnson. Like, you got to, like, we know that he deserves to be here. Does he?
Well, there's a small handful of those guys. And even guys that ascend to a perfect, even a life cycle, you watch life cycle of guys, you know, get married, have young families, you know, Jordan Spieth went through it. Ricky Fowler's clearly going through it right now. Will he come back? There's a lot of great players. There really are. And they grind to be great. And playing less and getting paid more. I could see getting used to that.
Right. And like, I'm not I'm not criticizing them for wanting that and doing it. And let's forget the whole, like, how much money does a person need? Whatever you want to do with your money, go and do it. Maybe you're donating all of it. Maybe
you don't get to do both.
Right? But to say, but I also deserve to be in the PGA Championship. Like, that major is really tough to get into. Right? So, anyways, the two ends of things. As we mentioned, also Brooke Henderson, 6 shots off the lead at the Women's Open. And to talk about both of those stories and much more, our golf reporter Bob Weeks joins us on the line. I feel like I'm a bit of an outsider here with this conversation. Like, I feel like you guys have the jackets, the membership jackets, and I'm here in the just a guest. Like, Bob, if you want it, just you and Dave, I'm cool.
Well, I was actually thinking of how I was going to talk about Brooke playing at the Open Championship, and I thought, well, maybe what I'll use is a tennis reference so I could bring you in, saying it's sort of like, you know, how different players play better on different kinds of courts.
Well,
and that's kind of how Brooke Henderson does.
I did that, not to brand myself as the tennis guy, but when you talked about how Lynx golf has never originally come naturally to Brooke Henderson, it's kind of like playing grass court tennis. Like, if you're a Canadian, you don't typically play grass court tennis until you get to a level where you can go overseas and play. Is that a fair comparison for a player like Brooke?
Yeah, it's similar in another way too, in that I know there's not very many grass court tennis clubs in Canada, as a matter of fact, and there's just not a lot of Lynx golf courses or experiences that you would call close to Lynx golf as they have it over there. So Brooke admitted, though, she's never played it really growing up. She did a little bit of amateur golf over there. And so her once a year trip over to the Open Championship is, as she said, it's a work in progress. And I think she's starting to understand it. And I think one of the biggest parts is, and she told me this earlier this year, that she said she's learning to love it. And Tom Watson did the same thing. When he first went over to Lynx to playing golf in Scotland, he said, how do people play this? And then he just started to fall in love with it and realize there's so many different shots and so many different ways to play it. And you play it on the ground a lot more than flying it through the air. And on one hole, you can have a 5-iron that goes 300 yards. And the next hole, you can hit a driver that goes 200 yards. So you have to adjust everything to it. And she's starting to love that. So she's not off to a great start through 2 rounds, but it's not a terrible start by any means.
But the reputation of Brooke now, Weeksy, if she's sitting, you know, 6 strokes back, it has that much more weight, does it not, in the fact that she's won at such a high level and won recently a high level with the major, and she's there. Like, when they're looking at the leaderboard, they know she's there.
Very much so. And the fact that she's won twice in the not only the major, but she also won another event in the last 6 weeks. She's won 2 times. And she does have a reputation for being very, very tough mentally, and tomorrow the winds are expected to get up to about 55 kilometers an hour in gusts. So it's going to be a real tough day, not only physically to try and get your shots and hit them and hope they go the right area, but also in terms of the mental stress that you're going to go through and things that are going to happen. It's going to be very difficult for them. And so I think that toughness also comes into her. And I think you're right. When you look down that leaderboard, there's a lot of names on there. And there are some very good players on there, obviously. But certainly Brooke stands out amongst those as someone who can put a low round on the scoreboard. And listen, with the bad weather and with her talent, she could move up very quickly. It wouldn't take much more than a 65 or something like that, which to put her back in contention for Sunday.
Well, I had the opportunity to play that course on a day when we had 4 different weather days. And literally, because we played in the morning and then had the lunch and then had the 2 ball in the afternoon, we had a 4-club wind at one point, and we had beautiful sunshine where we had, like, rain suits on to shorts and T-shirts. Like, it was as extreme as it was. And so I think that could favor her to her mental toughness. Does she have the all-round versatile game to battle through that and play those types of shots?
She does with the woods and the irons. You know, the putter has always been the kind of Achilles heel, and it's not like she's necessarily been a terrible putter, but she's been a streaky putter. However, in the last, say, 3 or 4 months, since she switched to a left-hand low grip and she made some other changes equipment-wise, she's really become a much better putter. Today she had 32 putts, but I tell you, it wasn't like a terrible putting day like you and I might have, Dave, on a golf course where you're leaving them 5 feet short or misreading them. You know, she was burning edges and she was a quarter of a revolution short from a ball going into the hole. So if one or two of those start to go, then I think she can be good. But she does have the fortitude and I think the all-around game, from with the exception of that putting, if it's hot or cold, to get through something and put a low score on. She won a tournament about 3 years ago in New Zealand in absolutely horrific conditions. Big, big wins. Some rain coming in sideways, and they kept playing because they wanted to get these women who had to fly to Australia the next day. They kept playing, and normally they would have stopped, and she won that. So hopefully she can dig back to that and draw from that.
So, Bob, Brooke Henderson will turn 25 in September. She's already the winningest Canadian golfer with two major titles. She's going to go to Ottawa, which is essentially like a home game for her later this year at the CN Championship. Like, how, in conversations that you have with her, whether it's on the record, off the record, how does she handle the moniker of being Canada's ambassador for this sport?
She's very, very gracious about it. The thing about Brooke that that a lot of people may not know, and I think in my dealings with her, as you said, on the record, off the record, when we're social, you know, and just chatting things up, she's probably the nicest person I've ever met. Like, she wouldn't say a bad word about anybody. She's a real, she's very grateful about what she's got, the talent that she has. It took her a while to kind of get comfortable with being a hero to so many young girls. But I think as she's matured and gotten a little bit older, you know, that's come a little bit easier to her. And she's prepared, I think, now. As you know, I can go back and look through all the different golfers, Canadian golfers, who had to learn what happens when you come home to play a home game. You know, Mike Weir said it took him a long time. Richard Zocco came and played here the week after he won the Greater Milwaukee Open one time and was just thrown into the heat of things. And it's tough for a Canadian player because you want to peak 1 week a year on a course that you may or may not love, and expect all these expectations on you. And it's hyper that when Brooke is there because, I mean, the last time she was in Ottawa, I can't tell you, I've never seen a crowd follow one group than at a golf tournament than they did follow Brooke. So, you know, nobody was following the leading groups. They were all up basically with 20 or 30 people who were all family. There was 100,000 people that probably following Brooke or whatever the numbers were there. It would have been if you were going through to Smith Falls, you could have fired a cannon off and not hurt anybody because there was nobody left in that town. So she's learning to adapt to it, and she's becoming more comfortable with it, I think.
So we talk about the impact Mike Weir had in the 30-somethings and late 20-somethings on the men's tour that, you know, that have us every single week with someone on the leaderboard with a Canadian flag beside their name, it seems like, in the men's game. Arguably too early to tell whether that kind of effect can be had with your work with Golf Canada on the women's side?
It's you can see the numbers are bigger, and that's probably the biggest thing. There are more young women playing golf overall, and that's a huge thing because it was a pretty small number, say, 10 years ago. And I attribute that to Brooke Henderson and to some of the efforts that Golf Canada has put forward in drawing them. I think you're going to see a wave in probably 8-10 years of women who are going to play high-level golf, whether that be amateur or professional, and talk about the fact that Brooke was their inspiration. You know, you go and talk to everybody from my partner now, Graham DeLette, and Adam Hadwin, and Corey Connors, and Matt Hughes, and they'll all tell you that the reason they're playing professional golf right now is because Mike Weir won the Masters, and what a guy he was to sort of inspire them. So I think you're going to see that, whether or not they can put as many players on the LPGA Tour. I know Golf Canada wants to do that, but it certainly doesn't hurt to have Brooke out there as someone showing you that it can be done.
Well, Brooke Henderson has given us a lot to talk about. And on the men's side, of course, Bob, LIV Golf has given us a lot to talk about. And earlier this week, Bryson DeChambeau, Phil Mickelson were among the 9 LIV golfers who have filed this antitrust lawsuit against the PGA Tour. They want to play this tour, but they also want to play in the FedEx Cup, and they want it all. So what's the reaction been to those who you have spoke to since this lawsuit was filed this week?
Well, nobody's shocked that that this came, and nobody's really surprised it came at this time. You know, the PGA Tour is just about to head into the three biggest weeks on its calendar with the playoffs, and of course, Liv has done a good job, I will say, at kind of stirring things up just when the PGA Tour wants it least. So we knew this was going to come at some point. I think the overall antitrust lawsuit is basically run to what we expected it would be. I must admit I was taken aback a little bit by the three players trying to get back into the FedEx Cup playoffs. It seems a little weird that you leave the league, you criticize, you know, you leave the PGA Tour, you criticize it, you say, I want to play less. You know, I've got more money now from them, thankfully. And now I want to go back and play these three tournaments. It seems to be a little bit awkward or just sort of fighting against what you've said before. So I'm not really sure where that's going to happen. We're going to find out Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. The court will rule on the temporary restraining order that will allow these players to go in. They'll just be added to the field as three more players. The bigger part of it is going to be interesting, and it will take a little bit longer to roll out. The LIV players have hired three really heavy hitter law firms in the U.S. Of course, they're being paid by the sovereign wealth fund, so they can afford to do that. And there's going to be what you're going to find over the next little while. There's going to be a lot of dirt that the PGA Tour and perhaps LIV do not want out in public, but is going to have to come public through disclosures that these two sides are going to have to make. We already found out that Phil Mickelson, for instance, was suspended in March and has been suspended for the next 2 years on the PGA Tour. We found out that some of the goings-on behind have involved the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, formerly the European Tour, talking to the majors, the people who run the majors, and trying to coerce them into stopping LIV players from competing. So it's going to get dirty before it gets settled, and there's going to be lots of stuff that comes out here. And I'm not sure who's going to win, but if the PGA Tour loses, not only do they have to pay damages, but automatically under antitrust rules, they have to pay three times whatever the damages are. So this is a big, big court case for both sides.
Wow. Man, it's the saga that never ends. anyways, Bob, appreciate you joining us. Great stuff as always. I do believe that Dave has a tea time for you. You guys can settle that after the show if you want, but... Anyways, great that Westin Golf was so well represented on the show.
Yeah, we just have to get Jeff O'Neill and we got our threesome, and then we have one guy from the other team that comes out and plays once in a while too. But
he's a good guy to play with.
Yes, he is. Have a great weekend, boys. Always good talking to you.
Awesome stuff. Thank you, Bob. There's our TSN Golf reporter, Bob Weeks, who doesn't play as much golf as
because he's working
everyone
during the golf season.
Thinks that he does.
He's working during the golf season.
Right? Yeah. Like he's every weekend. He's,
you know, you think about this last little swing and he's had so much going on that he hasn't traveled, but you know, Tiger's last run potentially at St. Andrews and then Brooke winning the Evian and then Brooke at Muirfield this week, it would have been a great time.
Yeah.
You know, to be over there, and he's just got so much going on in so many different directions in what he does.
Yeah. Graham Dillette, who's he's not new to television, but he's new to being full-time television and not being a tour player.
He's good, too.
And we had him on during the Open Championship. You were probably on the show, I think. And he was like, yeah, we just got to open up the budget and send us out there. Like, well, we've all had those conversations before, Graham. Welcome to the club.
Keep working on it, Graham.
Yeah.
Our designated budget guy.
Yeah, keep pushing on that one. So... anyway, it'll be fun to watch Brooke Henderson play this weekend.
Well, you know, you think about early, you think about the weather that's coming, and I just looked at it in Galen, and it's coming. And so she gets out early. She's the beauty of being sitting where she's sitting is she's going to get out early and get to post a score.
Right. And it can be your tee time.
You know what?
The difference,
the
right?
The tee time can be a huge differentiator at that place. And because you literally have different days within a couple of hours. So yeah. Right on the water and the wind blows like it is wide open there at points. A little less linksy, I think, than St. Andrews is in terms of variable bounces. But still, you know, a great links course.
Maybe more Canadian golfers need to spend time at Cabot Links, Cabot Cliffs.
We've got our own links courses.
Right? Pretty beautiful stuff. All right, coming up, we'll wrap up the show. Plus, we have our FanDuel Best Bets as Overdrive continues on TSN 1050 and the TSN app. Overdrive, Mark Rowan for Brian Hayes alongside Dave Pullen. And today's best bets are brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. We have a three-bet same-game parlay for you as the Blue Jays are at Target Field to take on the Twins tonight with Jose Barrios on the mound and the Jays offense clicking. We will take the Blue Jays at -1.5 and bet the over of 8.5 runs. Barrios had a career high of 13 strikeouts when these two teams play back in June. So we're going to take the over of 5.5 strikeouts for Barrios. Today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today.
So nice chance for the Blue Jays here on the road. They're 5-1 in their last six road games. Mm-hmm. Six more away. And so this little stretch, beat up on the Twins, finish it off.
It's a good stretch to get a real litmus test of where you are as a group, too, because I believe there are like a 20-game stretch where everyone's above 500.
Right.
But there are teams like the Twins that you believe that you're better than, right? Like
you got to win your series.
Well, you got to win your series. But if you're telling Blue Jay fans and the Blue Jays, I'm assuming, you're going to go into a playoff series with the Twins, you like your chances.
Absolutely.
It's not the Yankees and the Astros.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So win your games away from home. They're actually exactly 500 on the road right now. Come home five games over 500 on the road.
Yeah.
You know, come home like feeling really, really good. And then a nice home stretch in August. I think Cleveland might be first up when they come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe. And so another good test at home. Hey, I like this is a fun team to watch right now. This is fun team to watch. The energy level is there. You know, you talked about Bo Bichette and the factor that he is offensively. But everybody's chipping in right now. Feel good about the defense. Got to look after the arms.
Yeah, there are areas of this team that can concern you. You know, a lot of focus is on the lack of left-handed bats. Mm-hmm. And what that does to you in a potential playoff series where you can match up pitchers and really expose that. You know, starting pitching with Ross Stripling being out. Kikuchi's a wild card, but...
He's a wild card.
But, and I get, right away people will say, but the contract. You know, the other day, he did what a fifth starter does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not expecting eight innings of two-run ball.
No.
If you get
those... Give me five.
Mm-hmm. You know, you go through the order twice. Maybe 2.5 times.
That's where you need your eight out of somebody else.
Well, and that's when you need, you need your top end guys to minimize the workload on the bullpen.
Yeah.
So the bullpen.
And they have the last couple games.
Yeah, and they have. And, you know, the acquisition, especially of like Anthony Bass, you hope that.
That's a veteran.
And a guy who's having his best season when he's with the Marlins, if he can duplicate those numbers with the Blue Jays, then suddenly you. Everything, it's just funny, like a couple things make everything fall into place and you start liking your team a little more, you know.
But to turn it on now, you're getting some entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
You are. It's fun to watch.
Absolutely. So, we got that. We got golf, busy weekend.
Golf in the morning is great. Like getting up at 6:30 and flicking golf on. And we've been spoiled now because it's been 3 or 4 weeks in a row where we've been able to watch.
Evian Championship with Brooke Henderson winning.
With Brooke and St. Andrews before that. So we've been spoiled with the early morning weekend golf. We'll get that going tomorrow morning and we'll golf my own Sunday and Monday mornings.
So you're still in kind of summer Dave mode.
I'm in summer
mode. You're working, but you're...
Yeah, but this is...
But you're golfing and you're...
Late. I'm in pretty good summer mode.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm in pretty good summer mode. Keeping track of things because just like everything, it's easier to keep track of things than it is to get lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just keep track of things. You spend a couple hours a day making sure you know exactly where everybody is and you've updated your rosters. But if you do that once or twice a week, mm-hmm. and then you know who's signed and who hasn't and who's left on the RFA market, and it's easier to do work all the time than it is to try and play catch up.
Right.
It just is.
Well, we know what kind of student you were.
One who had to do
You weren't cramming right before the exam.
No, the guy beside me was so brilliant. Brilliant. He would open a book the night before and the book would crack. Literally, the binding would crack.
Yeah.
I don't even want to tell you that he went on to run the Bank of Ireland in North America. Like, like run it.
Not certain.
Not
yeah,
sort
yeah.
of.
It wasn't a teller.
It was brilliant.
Well, that's how certain people...
went by the nickname of Tanner.
Digest information. Well, always great working with you. It's funny how, like, you think... Here we are, early August. What are you going to talk about? And then 3 hours fly by. And
Jonathan Huberdeau gives us something to talk about. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks to Brad Treliving for signing Jonathan Huberdeau last night in giving us the content and coming on and giving us some great content. So enjoy the weekend.
You as well.
Thanks to everyone behind the glass. And Brian, I believe, is back on Monday. And they'll be back Monday, 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.